The B2B sales world is in turmoil. Quota attainment is down. Revenue growth has slowed. Turnover is up. All of this is in the face of ever-increasing pressure to perform. Is it a surprise that the average sales leader stays in place for only 12 to 18 months? That's barely enough time to start executing the strategy. These problems are fixable, and we are going to serve the sales leadership community with this show. I'm Lucas Price. I've launched and exited B2B startups and built elite sales organizations. Now I want to give back by bringing you this podcast, Building Elite Sales Teams. It will be full of actionable best practices to help you excel as a sales leader. We're going to burn the churn. Let's get back to winning. Building Elite Sales Teams is on. Welcome. I'm Lucas Price, and I'm here to learn with you about building elite sales teams. We all know that clarity and accountability are crucial to building high-performing organizations. The challenge isn't in knowing that it's important, but rather in successfully implementing that in your organization without alienating key team members. Today, we're going to be talking about how to do that with Tim Strickland. Tim is an advisory partner at Summit Partners. In that role, Tim works closely with Summit's investment team to identify new investment opportunities and collaborate with portfolio company leaders to help shape growth strategies and focus on long-term value creation. Before Summit Partners, Tim served as chief revenue officer and other leadership positions at ZoomInfo as the company grew from $144 million to more than $1 billion in revenues. During his tenure at ZoomInfo, Tim helped build the customer growth and strategic sales organizations and led go-to-market functions through the company's IPO in 2020. Before ZoomInfo, Tim held customer success and sales leadership roles at Marketo, where he was part of the leadership team that led the publicly traded company through a take-private acquisition in 2016 and subsequent acquisition by Adobe in 2018. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Lucas, no worries. Glad to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah. I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background before we start talking about accountability and clarity. How did you get into sales?
Man, that's a good question. I actually started in real estate development immediately after college. Graduated in 2007. Went to work for an awesome firm called Pacific Peninsula Group in Menlo Park. In 2007, the market was at its peak. And then in 2008, the housing crisis hit. And so stayed at that firm. It was a custom home builder. I was there for 3 years. The company, the firm itself, did an amazing job of continuing to push through that kind of down housing cycle. Ended up buying a lot of properties during that time at depressed rates. And as the tech IPO market picked back up coming out of 2010, guys hit multiple home runs. But while I was there, I realized, and especially being in the Bay Area where I live, that dynamism was something that I wanted to pursue in my career, and saw a lot of people in this area working at startups. And so I was like, you know what? I think I might maybe want to go try that. And so reached out to a lot of people in my network and found a gentleman who was on the board of a Series A funded B2B referral marketing technology business called Extol. Got a meeting with him, then got a meeting with the CEO and got into sales from there. And so worked as an individual contributor at that business for a couple years, moved into the customer success business there before going to Marketo, where I was actually an individual contributor, and then worked my way up into management for the first time there. So that was how I got into sales. When some people ask me that, I just say that I stumbled into it. But a lot of learnings along the way just by doing and failing and succeeding and a little bit of both. And that's how I got the career path started.
What do you think it was about you that led you from sales to sales leadership? Why was that a path that you chose to go down?
I think just impact. When you're managing a book of business or when you're managing a territory or when you have an individual quota, there's only so much that you can do on behalf of the broader business. And so I thought by moving into a leadership role, I could have a larger impact on the broader business. And that ended up being the case.
And then typically, when someone gets promoted into a leadership position, it's because they've been succeeding in sales. And I'm sure that's the case for you. And you've continued to succeed. Usually, when someone is succeeding in sales, there's usually something in their background that gave them the drive and determination to succeed. If you have the drive and determination, sales can be one of the easiest areas to succeed. And if you don't, it's the hardest area to succeed. Where did you get that?
Yeah, I don't know that I can point to any one thing, Lucas, other than just my background in athletics. I played athletics growing up, multiple sports in high school, was a collegiate athlete. I think when you're in those kind of team environment and you're forced to continually compete through failure, you build resilience. And sales is one of those things where you're going to fail an awful lot and you've got to be confident in your ability to succeed in the face of that. And you've got to find ways to stay the path and to lean on other people for support. And so maybe that part of my background ended up, you know, driving some of the success that I've had. I don't know. But I think I was really fortunate too, Lucas. I've had incredible support systems in every business that I've ever been in. And I've had incredible managers to learn from. And so I think that's another part that is just luck as it relates to my career. My first couple leaders at Marketo and then my first several leaders at ZoomInfo, and even going back to the Extol experience, our CEO and CRO there, I learned immensely from those individuals. And so seeing that in action and seeing how they built culture and how they set up cadences inside of the business and the accountability, you already mentioned this, that they drove. I've tried to take bits and pieces of all of what I thought was successful from those leaders and wrap it into how I operated businesses in my leadership roles as well.
I love hearing that because I think one of the things that sales leaders need to keep sight of is they're working in areas in software and technology. We're working in areas that are speculative, that are high risk, where a lot of things can go wrong. And a venture capitalist or an investor gets to spread their bets over lots of different companies. But as an individual contributor or as a sales leader, as a sales manager, you don't. And so the people you work with and the things that you can learn from the people that you work with and the dependability and reliability and resilience of those people is like incredibly important to your career because you don't get to spread your bets over six companies as an employee. Hearing you talk about how much you've learned from the people that you've worked with just reminds me of how conscientious everyone should be when they're taking a job.
Oh, for sure. It's not only that type of experience, but when you're interviewing, you always meet with the hiring manager and typically you meet with the hiring manager's boss. And I think those are really important people to suss out. And can I learn from this person? What can I learn from this person? Those are really interesting. They're really important for people as they're growing their career. And again, I was fortunate in that capacity. And even on the kind of failure and resiliency thread, Lucas, when I first moved into sales leadership, what I found pretty quickly is that most of the people on my team didn't sell like I did. But many of them were still either as successful or in many cases more successful than I was selling their way. And so I think taking the opportunity to be conscientious in that way and learn from those individuals, I think helps you be a better leader over time. And then the spreading out your bets thing, we can pull on this thread as it relates to operating. I think the truly successful revenue leaders find areas inside of their businesses to place bets. And so while you may not necessarily be able to spread your bets out over multiple companies like an investor does, you can definitely spread your bets out across your business to see which ones pick up and which ones don't. I see that happen in some companies, and I don't see it happen as much as I would like to see in others.
I think accountability and clarity for what you're being held accountable to, I think those two go hand in hand. Is that how you're thinking about it as well?
Definitely hard to be accountable if you don't know what you're being held accountable for. So I definitely feel like those things go hand in hand. It's interesting. I was in my role as an advisory partner at Summit. I do a lot of work with existing portfolio companies, and then I do a lot of work in due diligence with our deal teams who are signing letters of intent and things of that nature. And I was on the phone, I'm engaged in a project right now with one of the companies with which I work that is around specializing teams inside of their organization to give more clarity to those individuals on what they should be spending time on, so that they can be better, so that they can be more accountable to the business and so that the managers can hold them more accountable to the business.
Yeah.
I think as businesses scale and as they change and as they get bigger, asking people to do smaller jobs better in a more kind of refined way allows that accountability to take place. And it's also really good for clarity for those individuals.
Yeah. What were the things that happened in your career that made you like elevate, like accountability is a key pillar to success in building a high performing team? Was there something that you saw that made you think this is really one of the things that I'm going to emphasize as I build out an organization?
That's a good question. If I'm in a role that's responsible for delivering revenue to an organization, I am going to hold myself accountable to delivering those results even more so than I'm going to hold my team accountable to delivering those results. And so it starts with a self-realization or actualization in that way, Lucas, for me. I would never ask anybody in my organization to work harder or put in the time more than I would expect myself to do. And so I think it's really hard as a leader to drive accountability into the organization if you're not the one who's pushing on that harder on yourself. So I think that's one piece of it. And it's one of the things that I've found enabled myself to be successful in my early stage career that just followed me into the later stages of my career. Yeah. Like I was never going to be in a position where even if I was going to miss a number, right? If I was going to miss a month or if I was going to miss a quarter or if I didn't deliver a year, I wasn't going to be out there giving 150% of everything I had to give there. Because one, that's my job. And two, I would regret it if I didn't do that. And so even in the context of the broader company, you get these opportunities to work with one and you have to do everything in your power to make the absolute most of that opportunity. And so building a management framework that allows you to do that and allows you to hold yourself and the team accountable, I think is one of the most important pillars of kind of any sales leadership role.
I would imagine there's also a connection to athletics as well. I know people hear way too many sports analogies, but you played football at Princeton. I played high school football, which I know is not the same thing. But I know in football, sometimes you have a job to do. And sometimes on a given play, a given call, like your job could be pretty easy. And you could think, I want to do more than my job. But if they run the wrong play when you try to do more than your job, then there's going to be accountability Monday morning when you look at the tape. So I would imagine that athletics played into the idea of accountability in terms of, like, hey, if I do something other than my job on this play, then there's going to be an accountability moment. Everyone's going to see it up on the screen together.
That's true. It's also just giving 100% max effort. Like there are a lot of things inside of businesses that you can't control. There is one thing that you absolutely can. And it's, did you show up? If you control the things that you can control, then you at least give yourself a chance. And I never wanted to be in a scenario where I at least didn't give myself that chance.
One of the things I'm wondering about with this is, and it goes back to my intro, that the idea of accountability is easy, but a lot of times you go into an organization and maybe it's a portfolio company you work with, maybe it's an organization you entered and you were like, hey, there's not the right level of accountability here, and I'm going to be a change agent for it. And I think like being that change agent for it, there's a lot that you can do wrong. It's hard to do it the right way where the business continues to move forward. So can you tell us about like some of the challenges, things to watch out for?
The thing that I think of off the top of my head there, Lucas, is that if changing a culture takes time. And so if you try to take a big swing and you miss, then it ruins your ability to influence people. And so I think if you want to change culture, particularly in a larger organization, it's got to happen over time. And you've got to find little wins to celebrate that kind of bring people along with you. And then you have to find the people inside of your organization who buy in early to the change that has to occur. And you've got to lean on them and you've got to make them change agents. Like changing culture is not a me job. It is very much a we job. And so find those people and lean on them and then bring other people into the organization who buy into that vision as well and lean on those folks. It is a total team effort.
You mentioned that some of the mentors you've had, some of the things you've learned from them is the right cadences for running an organization. I think those cadences are very important to building a culture of accountability. What are some of the principles around the cadences that are based on accountability?
The one that I would bet actually still exists today at ZoomInfo was, and this, it's actually accelerated in COVID when all of us went remote. Our teams and our managers, myself included, did daily stand-ups at 8 a.m. in the morning, and we did daily stand-down at 5 p.m. in the afternoon or 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And it was, what is our goal for today? Let's talk about that goal. Let's give the team visibility to the goal or goals. What do we want to do today? What do we want to accomplish? And then checking in at the end of the day with everybody on that team. How did we do against it? Why did we succeed? What are ways in which people are succeeding? Didn't achieve their part of that goal. Why? What can we learn from that? How can we make that message more broad? How can we take the wins that we're seeing and communicate those out on a more regular basis? And if you want to drive accountability, talk to everybody every day. That's part of it. And it also forces managers, myself included, to really learn what's happening in the business. It gives you the ability in real time to make adjustments. And it also forces you to coach. I see far too many organizations not coaching enough in real time. And if you're with your team every day, you find out how people are doing well and where people are hitting roadblocks. Not only can you remove those roadblocks, but you can give real-time feedback to everybody hears. And if you do that on a regular basis, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And some people think we run 60-day sales cycles or we're not running that many opportunities at one time. How can we get together twice a day and it be productive and not monotonous? Find ways to make it valuable. People are on calls every day, all day, and there's always opportunities to give feedback where people can learn and get better.
Is that something that every manager is running with their team? And then as you as a leader, are you rotating between teams? Or what are the mechanics of how that works?
Yeah, I would rotate between teams. And then I would also have daily stand downs with my leadership team. We know what the goals are. How did we do? How did this team do? What are we seeing? So it gave me the same thing. Are we seeing trends in certain areas of the business that can be extrapolated? Are there certain areas of the business that are being impacted by something that I need to know about that could have a negative impact on the rest of the business? How are my managers doing? Are they okay? Are they doing well? What is the culture inside of their organization? How are their reps doing? Which reps are doing really well? Which one need extra help? Who can I potentially elevate into leadership position? You get a lot of visibility when you see people a lot. And so I think that's one reason why a lot of leaders want to get people back into the office is so that they can have that type of interaction in person. But if you have to do it remotely, I still think it's really valuable. You learn a lot.
The clarity that goes along with that in order to bring the accountability, is that a once a quarter thing or a couple times a year or whenever strategic priorities change? How do you think about the right cadence around making sure that people understand exactly what their goals are?
Yeah, I think we would do, especially in the revenue organization, we would do monthly all-hands calls. And that was a look back on the prior months. How did we do? And a look at the current months that we're in. What do we need to go deliver? And then we would do quarterly all-hands with the entire business, not just the revenue organization, where our larger company strategic goals would be reviewed for the prior quarter and then set for the next. And then our annual planning with finance, Lucas, that was the top level. Hey, what do we have to deliver? How are we going to go deliver that? If it's particularly related to revenue, what are the leverage points that we have inside of the organization to go extract growth? What pilots have we run over the last 6 months? Which one of those do we feel like we can invest in? Which two of those do we think we can invest in? Where are competitors coming? Do we have product gaps? Do we need to fill those? Do we have M&A? That stuff happened at a leadership team regularly. I would say like quarterly and even monthly. In some cases, we would do monthly operating reviews for our CEO, where we would be responsible for finding trends in the business and then reporting them out to the broader executive team. But in the kind of financial planning, that would happen every 6 months.
Part and parcel with accountability is difficult conversations, right? Is what
you have enough, you get used to it pretty quick.
You get used to it, but they can still go wrong. What are the things that you keep in mind in terms of like how to handle a difficult conversation? And I'll go first on this one and you can critique how I think about it. I think that having your boundaries set up, like, okay, if this happens or this doesn't happen, then this is the result. And having clarity about what those boundaries are is one of the really important parts of it. And the other important part of it is acknowledging and understanding and believing the other person's feelings about it. That doesn't mean accepting what they want, but it means being grounded in both, this is what my boundary is, and I believe the feelings that you have about my boundary. And so I would say those are the kind of two things that I try to keep in mind in those difficult conversations.
The way that I would answer that, I think, is twofold, or maybe three. One is similar to one of the themes that you just drew on, which is basically empathy, I think, which is if you're having a difficult conversation, you're having it with somebody else or a group of other people. And so trying to understand their perspective is really important for the dialogue, because you could come into a dialogue that you think is going to be a hard conversation with a preconceived notion of what that other person or group of people were thinking at the time, or think about a certain topic, or preconceived notions about decisions that they've made, which could be entirely wrong. And so being open, I think, to having a real dialogue and being empathetic to the other people is critical. And then two, when I think you still need to be honest, you need to convey your feeling or thought or belief about a given topic. I've always also, I think, had greater success in those moments if I can back up points with data. And so empathetic and being armed with information, I think, is really helpful. But the other thing I think that makes having difficult conversations easier as you have more of them is also you have to be self-critical and allow for people to give you feedback too and not get defensive. So it's a two-way street. And I think that's part and parcel with, hey, delivering feedback is one thing, but you better be open to it at the same time.
A great point. I think that a lot of times that getting to the truth is the most challenging part. And I think that can be what's challenging about empathy as well. It's like empathy is like a key part of it. But a lot of times that empathy can be like, hey, I went in with one preconceived notion. I've talked to this person. They've changed my preconceived notion.
Right.
Was I wrong? Or am I being run over by this person? Am I being persuaded and convinced of things that are not true? And I think like balancing that and sorting through that is one of the things that's very difficult about management.
Yeah, I agree. And to the degree that you can have data points, I think that helps you. Fostering a culture of debate, Lucas, where if difficult happen regularly enough, again, they just become less difficult. There were plenty of times when either myself and other executive leaders in organizations have disagreed about paths forward or the best path forward or the best path to success. And disagreement is perfectly fine. And a lot of times you'll have these quote unquote difficult conversations or debates and walk away still disagreeing. And that's perfectly okay.
Great conversation here today, Tim. You've shared a lot of wisdom with us. To start to wrap us up here, what do you have a couple of takeaways that our listeners should think of? Just to summarize, if you are thinking about building more accountability into your organization and how to build more accountability into your organization.
As a leader, take it slowly. Celebrate quick wins. Find the change agents inside of your organization to drive the change on the organization's behalf. And don't feel like you have to do it alone. Build a support system and then find people inside of your organization to champion that change.
A couple of those are the same takeaways that I was going to share here. I think I loved what you said about, hey, it takes time. There are certain changes that when you make them, if you do it wrong, you're going to lose influence. So be very deliberate about how you do it. Bring people along and find the other change agents to work with you. And then the other point is, you talked about the daily stand up and the daily stand down, but I think that very consistent communication, open lines of communication, really understanding what's going on within the organization helps you get to the truth that brings the accountability to the organization. Those are some great points. Where our listeners find you online?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can also email me at tstrickland@summitpartners.com if you want to chat further.
If you enjoyed this episode of Building Elite Sales Teams, please leave us a review in your favorite podcast app. You can find more content about Building Elite Sales Teams online at yardstick.team/blog. And you can also find me and Yardstick online as well. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks for joining us today on Building Elite Sales Teams. Please remember to give us a 5-star review. And if you want more information about Yardstick, you can find us at www.yardstick.team. You can follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn by searching for Lucas Price.